What is your major malfunction, numbnut? Didn't mommy and daddy show you enough attention when you were a child?
And you have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone.
Oh, who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Oh, shoot.
Real princesses arrive, and other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just for her.
The truth shall set you free, but first, it will piss you off. Naughty by Nature, with Nature Boy. Interesting people, with interesting ideas, for an interesting conversation. Hola y bienvenidas. With every passing day, it is becoming ever clearer the amount and severity in the decline in health and the rise in mortality. Research studies are emerging daily showing how young people are dying suddenly from causes that they should not be. Excess deaths are rising and the birth rate is steadily declining. The FDA recently announced the average life expectancy in the U.S. has declined by 3 years. In just the last few. How could this be? What's causing it? Our science experts and medical experts are baffled. Unknown cause is becoming the catchphrase of the day. But for those who have eyes to see, the mystery is clear. But to others, it is still and will remain a mystery. Hopefully, by the end of this podcast, more layers of that mystery will be unveiled. Tonight, we are joined by a medical insider. For anonymity's sake, we shall refer to him as Captain Drips. He is a longtime friend of mine and a true medical professional. He knows what he's talking about. In addition, he's doing God's work. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show the medical insider of medical insiders, Captain Drips. How are you doing, amigo?
I am well, Nature Boy. How about yourself?
I'm digging your avatar, man. I've never seen that before. That's cool as heck, man. Got a bald head.
I'm just wondering if it doesn't get hand movements. It's got the bald hair and the goatee pretty well nailed.
Yeah, it's nice.
Probably a little less gray in my goatee, but that's pretty accurate.
Hey, you know, us follically challenged individuals got to stay together. You know what I'm saying?
I don't even consider myself follically challenged because I take a razor to my head every time I get in the shower. So I'm not even sure how much hair I have left, to be honest with you.
I know exactly how much hair I have left, and it's getting less and less with every passing day. I started when I was 25 getting as my buddy named it, my flesh-colored yarmulke, my back bald spot. I remember being young, hairs down to here. I'm thinking, damn, you're looking good. Then I'm in the store, look up at a security camera, and all this hair just goes down in like a volcano crater, straight to this flat, almost round, bald head. I got tired of dealing with it, man. I'm never going to do it over. So one day I just took a razor to it, probably about close to 20 years ago. And
yeah, that's about where I'm at.
It saved a bunch on the barbers, man. I just got one of those skull shavers.
Yeah. They're not bad. They're not my favorite. I prefer the actual pure Mr. Clean look. Okay. So I still take a razor to it, but in a pinch I do. I have one of those bulldogs, and then someone for Christmas bought me another one, a little Chinese special, but it works extremely well. So yeah, me, as a teenager, I had long hair, and then I got close to college, and I went with a kind of a crew cut type deal. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but one day I just said, you know, I'm just going to shave it off. And it dawned on me. I'm like, wow, this is so easy. I just go in and wash my head. I don't have to pay for haircuts. I don't have to pay for anything. You know, even if you have to replace, or even if you replace a razor at $100 a year, you're still ahead of the game.
I do Harry's razors. They're like,
yeah, I did Harry's and I like actually my for my face. I'm more of a safety razor. I still do the traditional with the brush and the hot foam. But for my head, I actually like Dollar Shave Club the best.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
So anyone that's looking to shave your head, I think Dollar Shave Club razor to shave your head.
Yeah, well, it's a lot better than trying to go get a Gillette. You know, it's the old adage, they give you the equipment for free and they bleed you on the down line. Mm-hmm. You go get a pack of mm-hmm. five razors and it's $30 and you're like, $30?
I saw that.
I paid $20 for the razor and it gave me three blades and now you want to charge me $30 for five blades? I don't know what they are. I haven't bought in a long time, but I knew when I did.
That's about what they are.
Yeah, that's about
That's about it. They're absurd. It's absurd what they charge for this stuff.
Yeah, I know. Well, anything is. I just went to the grocery store and got two small bags of groceries. No alcohol, no meat. I did get a little bit of drain out. I got a clogged drain, but I mean, just basic stuff. Picked up some stuff. Just some eggs and cheese for a friend who's not feeling. Mm-hmm. Dropped it off at her house. Right, $79 with a discount. With a fucking discount. Yeah. I'm like, holy shit.
I was at Publix the other day. That's our big chain in Florida, Publix.
Very
familiar. And I don't remember what it was, just a you know, a standard grocery trip. It used to be about $100. Now it's about $200. And the lady said to me, you know, would you like to donate to XYZ? And I said, ma'am, I said, honestly, I have no problem donating, but until someone does something with these goddamn food costs, I'm not donating to shit.
How about
because quite frankly, yeah, anything I would have donated in the past is going into my own kitchen. So sorry about that. And she kind of laughed and she said, yeah, you're far from the first person that said something like that. I said, I didn't expect to be.
Exactly.
And it's funny. I mean, at least from the economic side, I got to laugh, you know, because, you know, as much as people want to bust on Florida, the economy in Florida is booming. Now, we have the inflation that the rest of the country has, but, you know, we don't have state income taxes. But even here, you know, what I used to pay just in, you know, I got here in you know, mid 2022, really the inflation here really took off probably starting in the fall of 22 and into 23. You know, I'm still ahead of the game compared to what I spent out of pocket living up north. I'm still ahead of the game. So I'm not really complaining. But at the same time, I'm looking around going, you know, what cost me $125 5 months ago is costing me $225 now. Yeah. You know, between really here, the only bigger expenses here that I can say are definitely more expensive than Florida are insurances. Insurance is definitely more expensive. And then food costs have gone up. Otherwise, everything else is great from a financial perspective.
I'm in California, you know, and I see the gas prices for y'all complaining. Oh, it's $4 a gallon here. My God, the world's coming to an end. And I'm like, hold my beer, bitches. We celebrate when it gets down to $5. Oh, dude, gas only $5 a gallon. Barely go out there and fill up your tank. Good God, in this crazy state. But I don't want to talk about that. We could go on all night. But you brought up an interesting
point. I know.
Before we get started, to let the people know who you are, could you give us a brief background on who you are, your qualifications, and then also I want to kind of have a brief little discussion on your time or why you now live in Florida when you used to live up in DC. So you roll with it. I'm going to kick back, drink a little bit of apple cider, non-alcoholic, by the way, and hear what you got.
All right. Sounds good. So I'm a neonatal nurse practitioner. For people that aren't familiar with the concept, I mean, a lot of people are because we're everywhere now, but a nurse practitioner is basically someone who starts off as a nurse, in theory becomes an expert in the field that they practice in. They go on to a graduate education where they get the more in-depth diagnostic and pathophysiology. So basically anyone who might be familiar with, and for whatever doctors are out there listening, yeah, I'm sorry, you're not going to like this, but it's true. So basically what it does is it takes the medical school model and reverses it. For someone to become a physician, they go to get their undergrad degree, they go to medical school, they become a resident. Then, you know, resident, whether it's pediatrics, whether it's, you know, family medicine, and then they go into practice. If you want to get into a subspecialty, we'll take my subspecialty of neonatology. So, you know, the pipeline for that for a physician would be they'd go to medical school, they'd do a pediatric residency, and they would do a neonatal fellowship. And then they would come out and practice. So basically, the nurse practitioner model was something that started to take hold in the late 1960s, early 1970s. It was, in many cases, it was in response to a lack of physicians. And what they did was they took nurses who were experts in whatever field they practiced in. So, you know, if you were a cardiac nurse, you were a neonatal nurse or neonatal intensive care nurse. And they established programs where then you would take all that nursing experience, then you would go back to school, you would learn the specific pathophysiology, you know, applicable to your specialty. You would get the diagnostic stuff, the stuff that the physicians will get in school as well, and you'd come out and practice. Now, I'm not downing medical school. Yes, medical school is very intense. It's very scientific. It goes into a lot of the, you know, a lot of the in-depth stuff that you don't necessarily get as an advanced practice nurse, but it's out there and you can get it on your own. So that's pretty much what a nurse practitioner does. And in every state in the country, even in states where I'm at, has a fairly restrictive practice for nurse practitioners. Nurse practitioners are licensed to diagnose, they're licensed to treat, they're licensed to prescribe medications, prescribe diagnostic testing, interpret such testing, and do the exact same thing a physician can do. So my experience, I've been in this field since the late 1990s. The absolute majority of it has been in neonatology, which is premature babies up to about 2 years old. I also have quite a bit of experience in neurosurgical trauma and cardiac surgery. So that's the kind of the bulk of my experience as far as clinical practice. I've been a nurse practitioner since 2008. Mm-hmm. And have practiced. I've been practicing continuously since then.
So for the listeners out there, we can pretty much call you an expert, correct?
In my field, yes, I would. I don't know that I feel that I'm an expert, but yeah, based on years of experience and what I have done, I would fall into that class. I would fall into that classification as an expert in this field. Yes.
So in layman's
terms, but I'll be honest with you, mm-hmm. I hate the term expert. It has been so destroyed. That's definitely over the last 4 years.
True.
So it has. I hesitate to even put that moniker near my name.
Yeah, but let's just put it in layman's terms. You know, sure. Your shit, right? You know your shit.
I like to think I know what I'm talking about. When it comes to this field, I like to think I know what I'm talking
about. Well, having known you for years, I can vouch that, yeah, you know what you're talking about. Yeah. So with that, cool. Now, everybody's got an idea of who you are, your qualifications. Mm-hmm. Why did you live in Washington? And what was just a brief tale of your faithful trip from Washington down to Florida? Why the fuck did you have to move, man? So you got it good up there.
I ended up in the D.C. area by pure accident. I'll go into a little bit of backstory. I come from a combination of a both very highly medical and very highly military family. I'm almost embarrassed to admit it sometimes, but I did not choose the military route. I came very close a few times, and that little voice in the back of my head said, "Dude, don't do this." And I listened to it, and probably one of the better things I did. My mother, who was also, she's now retired, but she was a nurse practitioner, was Army. And she ended up in Afghanistan. Her medical unit was the first U.S. medical unit at Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan in the early 2000s. Turns out the hospital there was initially built by the German military, and then the Americans came in and took it over. So she spent a couple of years in Afghanistan, and she came back a complete and total disaster. Then after being home, I actually am originally from the Western Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh area. I had lived in North Carolina for a few years, life changes, and I ended up moving back to the Pittsburgh area, interestingly enough, in the spring of 2001. And so, as I said, my mother ended up in the military. She came back about 6 months later. She got a phone call that said, "Well, here's the deal. you can either accept the stateside assignment now, or you can roll the dice. But if you roll the dice, I guarantee you, if you get called up again, you're going to end up back in the Middle East. So I can't say that I blame her for the choice that she made, but she opted to take the stateside, ended up at Walter Reed in the D.C. area. So I said, yeah, I'm going to come down for a couple months, help you out, because I knew she was struggling. And, you know, I ended up finding a job because I was just about to start graduate school. I ended up finding a job that lined up perfectly for pretty much preparing me for what I did. And then one thing led to another, ended up meeting my now wife and, you know, raising a family. And before I know it, I've been in the D.C. area for 17 years. It was tough financially. I hated the area probably from about a year or so after I lived there. Yeah. But my wife is from the area. All her family was there. She had older children when we got married. So everything was there. And as much as I disliked it, I figured, you know, this is where I'm at and I'll stay there. Financially, it was a beast. Yeah. Then bring in COVID.
Ooh, the Rona. So, life changer.
Yeah, the coronavirus. Yeah, let's bring in the old, we'll bring in the old COVID. Yeah, and, you know, everything went along as, you know, I was not directly affected by the lockdowns because as a medical professional, we were kind of exempt from all of it. And, you know, I went along with everything. And then the magic jibby jab rolled out. Mm-hmm. And I read the stuff and I looked at the stuff and I said, I have no interest in this. I don't want it. I understand the risk profile. I don't want the vaccine. And I was one of the few people that I know personally. I know a lot of people did, but at least in my own sphere, mm-hmm. in December 2020, before the product itself was given to human beings in mass,
yeah.
Pfizer released all their documentation. And as tough as it was, I sat and I read all, I don't remember how many pages of it. And the first thing that really struck me was I said, okay, so your study endpoints were reduction in symptoms. You're telling me that you're trying to end a pandemic by a product that simply reduces symptoms.
Yep.
I said, well, I thought the biggest, the biggest study endpoints, or at least what I would be looking at, would be, does this particular product stop the transmission of said virus? And is there any mortality benefit? So they never looked at it.
Let me interject really quick, because this is something that I've always said, and I want to make sure it's true. The pharmaceutical mm-hmm. companies never officially said that the COVID, the mRNA, or they always get that confused, the COVID shot, mm-hmm. they never said that it would stop transmission. They only said
they never did.
Reduction of symptoms, which I find odd because right off the bat, they were honest, right?
Yes. But
through their little minions and their propaganda mm-hmm. channels, everybody else says, no, it's fighting the symptoms. So officially, it's officially never said it. Okay.
The official documentation from Pfizer. Now, I never read Moderna's documentation. I never read Johnson & Johnson. Never really dove into the AstraZeneca because that was more of a European and other parts of the world. So it wasn't in the United States. I didn't look at it. So now, the other interesting thing that at first, you know, I took as a good point, but then, you know, about 6 to 8 months later said, what the F? Is they clearly said in the documentation that was released in December 2020, we have not tested this product on pregnant women. We don't recommend pregnant women take it. I said, okay. So when I first read the documentation in December 2020, I said, okay, fine. You know what? You're a high-risk person. We, at this point in time, by December of 2020, it was clear who was most at risk. Who was most at risk for, if you contracted this virus, who was most at risk for dying, who was most at risk for adverse events, and it wasn't the general population. And my feeling was, okay, fine. You came up with this thing. You came up with it and to coin a phrase, warp speed. It's out on the market. If you want it, fine. You're an adult. Go take it. I had no problem with that. My opposition to any of this stuff did not come until the mandates. And I started really raising questions, at least about the vaccine in probably, I guess, I first remember it late January, February 2020, that my issue was, well, wait a second. All you people are talking about how this prevents this. It stops transmission. It does this. It does this. But the pharmaceutical company itself states it didn't even test for that. Yeah. So where are you coming off with this thing? And I tried telling people and, you know, who were singing its praises. And I said, well, I said, you know, Pfizer, we'll use Pfizer because that was the big one. Mm-hmm. I said, well, did you read the documentation that Pfizer released in December 2020? I said, it clearly states that their study endpoints were reduction in symptoms. It never looked at hospitalization. It didn't look at mortality. And it didn't look to see whether or not the thing could prevent the transmission that you're claiming that it does.
Yeah. It's funny how just the lies that I think and the propaganda methods that have, I think to a fair degree amount of people, there's still a lot of asleep people out there.
There are still a lot of people asleep.
And just about the ruthlessness and the lies and the methods mm-hmm. that they use to shape the narrative, to shape the mind of the public. And that's what gets me is I understand propaganda. I've studied advertising, you know, and to me, it's as clear as a day is long. Oh, that ad right there or that little thing, that's a sponsored content that was paid for by the drug manufacturers to get put in that one specific television. Oh, the what? Mm-hmm. I try to point out, then I call it the fluoride stare, the what? Or that, or you get that program reaction, that anger response, the retort of, then show me your sources. Which I find
once I get an emotional response out of somebody on the pro establishment side, that's when I know it's like, okay, you're clearly Jim Jones would have loved you. You would have taken the Flavor Aid on the first sip.
I do too. I find it frustrating. And just a pet peeve of mine is that I heard so many things. I've heard it personally. And you talk about these things. And the first thing, so they use that retort of show me the sources. This is fact check. And it's not what pisses me off. It's a simple retort. It's not from a point of curiosity and investigation. It's not like, hey, man, that sounds like bullshit. I'd really like to look into it. Could you just like point me in a couple directions?
It's an emotional response.
It is emotional response. And once it's up.
That's exactly how I know that I'm not going to get anywhere with somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's interesting. It's a little bit different in Florida because, you know, and I tell people, I talk because what I do, I cover multiple different hospitals. So I'm in contact with multiple different groups of nurses. And, you know, I tell people, I said, you know, if you spent the last 4 years in Florida, you probably don't appreciate the hell that the rest of us went through. And you don't realize how lucky you actually were. Now, the hospitals pushed the vaccine mandates here. People definitely lost their jobs. People definitely had to fight for it. And, you know, trying not to get political, I know, you know, we're right in the heat of the Republican primary right now, but I will hand it. Yeah. For all his faults, I will be forever grateful to Ron DeSantis because the reason I'm in Florida is because he was the only governor in the United States that stood up for healthcare professionals. He tried suing the federal government. And unfortunately, the leg up that the federal government has over all the states is CMS or Center for Medicare, Medicaid. And basically what they did was they said, well, we'll take all the Medicare funding out of the state of Florida. Well, anyone that knows the state of Florida knows that if you took the Medicare funding out of the state of Florida, you'd collapse the healthcare system. And that's known. There's no joke about it. So basically what the state of Florida did was they said, okay, fine, keep your mandates. The state of Florida will do absolutely nothing to enforce them. And at the time before I moved, you went on to the attorney's general office of the state of Florida, and there was about seven different exemption forms. And what the state did was they said, okay, these are all the various exemptions. If you don't want the vaccine, here's your exemptions. And the law in Florida is if you refuse a vaccine exemption, that's a $50,000 per occurrence fine on the hospitals. Cool. So what they basically did was they said, fine, let the mandate stick, but here are your options for exemptions. And they pretty much put in a, I don't want to call it ironclad, but they put in a pretty strong system where it made it so that the hospitals would be penalized even more for refusing exemptions than allowing them. And that's ultimately what happened. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history. There's still people that fight against the flu vaccine mandates. I personally have had no problem with exemptions with flu vaccines. I know in other parts of the state, certain hospitals are a little worse.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they don't bother us. There are absolutely no mask mandates in the state of Florida, including in hospitals. And, you know, I talk to colleagues in other parts of the country that are all masked up again. Pretty much in Florida, if you go back to pre-2020, whatever guidelines for when you wore a mask, you know, if you're in the operating room, if you're doing a sterile procedure,
right,
if you're with a patient that has certain documented respiratory illnesses, you're supposed to wear a mask. But that all predates 2020. So we're pretty much here operating on the pre-COVID hysteria guidelines. So there's no masks in the hospitals. If you want to wear a mask, fine. You do see some people, you know, I occasionally will see the crazy old lady with a mask on driving the car by herself. But for the most part, you rarely see a mask.
I see them in California more probably. But it's definitely the exception, not the rule. Like
good.
In a grocery
that's good.
Store, you might see a handful of people wearing masks.
Sure.
And that's it, which is to me, anybody wearing a mask in this day and age, forgive me if I offend anybody out there, you're lost fucking cause.
Oh, absolutely.
And just like what you said about the masks is just the brainwashing of the sheeple. I had, you know, I'm like you, I want to look into something before I put my stamp on it. Okay. So I had a box of N95s in my garage when this hit. And it was because I was doing insulation work. And two, that's when we had the fire seasons. And there were times when the smoke was so bad, you really couldn't go outside with them.
They're
effective in those conditions. So I looked at the back of it, says, what does this protect you against? You know, what's it going to do? And it said, it protects you against 95% of all particulates 3 microns or above. Okay. So I said, okay, that's cool. So now I know the rate of protection. Now let me go over here and see the size of a coronavirus and it says a micron or less.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, so the cliche I've been hearing about wearing a mask to stop the corona would be like trying to stop mosquitoes with a cyclone fence. And then once it did that, then it really just clicked. It didn't blow my mind because I kind of suspected it.
Yeah.
And then after that, I would still see people wearing face diapers. And then I started thinking a bit more about this. Okay, you have a piece of cloth or paper that you're wearing for an extended amount of time. A few things aren't happening naturally. One, you're not aspirating your CO2 correctly, right? So you are getting higher rates of CO2. And then two, you're not being able to expel bacteria, and part of the way the body cleanses itself, besides taking a dump, sweat in your skin, is by respiration, right? So what's happening is how that moist rag is starting to collect all that bacteria, plus the bacteria that it comes in contact with. And I'm like, man, that just sounds like a Petri dish, okay? So
it's exactly what it is.
I saw a small local news article on the web where this news company says, hey, I wonder if we swab the inside of some mask, let's put it in a Petri dish and see what happens. Right. And of course that caught my,
they let that story out.
Yeah. They let it out. Right. But it was local and it was hard. It wasn't everywhere. Right. And when they got the results back, it was horrifying. Mm-hmm. Strep. These diseases that have potentially kill your ass are now breeding on the thing that's right in front of your bloody mask and your face. Mm-hmm. And yet you try to tell people about that and you get the fluoride stare or you get the reaction. So when I see people wearing masks in this day and age,
I'll tell you where a mask in this type of circumstance would actually be. It's not foolproof.
Right.
It might have some effect. So if I or you have a respiratory viral illness, whether it's COVID, whether it's the flu, if the person that has the illness is wearing the mask and coughing and sneezing, Yeah. Theoretically, it can cut down on the amount of the particulate that they're putting out into the atmosphere.
That I will agree with.
But this all, but again, this is all contingent on how close you are to the person, how long you're in contact with the person. But as far as protecting yourself, by the only thing that you could use, that if you were that germophobic, and ultimately I think it would kill you because you'd destroy your own immune system, would be something called a PAPR, which is a purified air. Mm-hmm. Oh God, what's it stand for? I can't remember what it stands for. But basically, what it is, it's a hood that goes over your head and is connected to a HEPA filter.
Yeah.
And if you want to walk around, it's what you see. If you ever watch a movie, I'm thinking of the Dustin Hoffman
Contagion. That's exactly what
in the 90s about. Outbreak.
Oh, yeah, outbreak.
That's exactly what it is. So when you see people that are working in labs, they're wearing the hoods, that they're basically, their air is being completely filtered. They're not rebreathing what they're spewing out because it's being filtered. If you're putting a mask on your face, you are rebreathing anything that you've breathed in. It's going back out. It's either, you're either breathing it right back in when you take your next breath, mm-hmm. or it's staying in there and it's colonizing on the now wet surface of the mask. Because you're expiring and you have fluid and moisture in your expiration. Mm-hmm. Biggest thing that worries me about people that live in these masks, believe it or not, is not even so much bacteria, although the bacterial is the problem, is fungus. And because I tell you what, I would take 14 COVID infections over a fungal pneumonia in a heartbeat because I'll get over the COVID.
Right.
A fungal pneumonia can kill you. It's bad.
Yeah.
So. You know, there are, it's sad because, you know, there are a few, not for everybody, but there are some instances where a plain surgical mask can cut down on spread of something, but it's whether it's with the person that was wearing it is the person that's sick.
Yeah.
So as far as you wearing a 3M surgical mask, let me tell you what surgical masks are for. I do sterile procedures all mm-hmm. the time. I wear surgical masks all the time for 45 minutes to an hour. Mm-hmm. It's to prevent me from spitting into the damn surgical field. It's the same thing if a surgeon is doing a surgery. The surgical mask the surgeon is wearing is to prevent the surgeon from spitting into the surgical field. That's what it's for.
Let me ask you,
and that's what it works for.
Along sure. those lines, all right? And I think this is fairly relevant. Mm-hmm. What is the procedure of throwing away that mask? What is done once it's come off? What's the procedure of disposal? Is it just thrown on the street or thrown on the garbage can?
I mean, a regular surgical mask after you were done, it's just routine throw in the trash.
Oh, it is.
Okay. Yeah. And which is really funny. Okay. So we'll go back to pre-2020.
Right.
We used to have to do this thing called fit testing. Mm-hmm. Where once a year you're supposed to go to the human resources or the occupational health. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to put an N95 mask on, and they put this hood over your head, and they spray this solution inside the hood that's got, I think it's saccharin solution. And you're supposed to tell them if you can taste anything sweet. Well, you know, we'll go back to the avatar. I have facial hair. I have had facial hair since I've gone into medicine in the mid-1990s. Mm-hmm. So the hospital that I worked for the majority of my career, their policy was, if you have facial hair, you cannot be fit tested because they can't ensure the seal on the face with facial hair, which actually makes sense. So I was relegated to the group of people that had to wear a PAPR hood if I had to be in a situation. And typically, prior to the COVID hysteria, this was for TB. So right. if I had, I mean, and in my specialty, I have never run across a baby with tuberculosis. So it really wasn't a big, it really never applied to me, but the long and short of that story was prior to 2020, I was told you can't wear an N95 because you have facial hair. Well, come March of 2020, suddenly not all, now. And then the other thing was with N95s, the procedure always was if you were, you know, in a clinical situation that called for an N95, you wore your N95 when you were in an encounter with that patient, when you left the room. You took the N95 off. In that particular case, because it was typically an isolation situation that was usually TB, you were supposed to take that N95 off. You were supposed to place it in a special trash receptacle not just the standard trash. Mm-hmm. And you were never supposed to reuse a mask. That was the absolute hard and fast stop. Masks, gloves, gowns, any type of what's called personal protective equipment was a one-time use piece of equipment. You did not reuse your mask. You did not reuse your gown. You did not reuse your gloves. About the only thing that I've ever seen that were reused were if you were wearing like plastic goggles, those could be cleaned with, you know, disinfectants. But as far as the, and I remember saying in March of 2020, when they said, you know, they issued all these, I said, well, why is it okay now to reuse these masks when 3 months ago, if I was caught reusing a mask, I would have been penalized. Yeah. Same thing about wearing a mask in the hallways.
I can remember.
You weren't, you know, you weren't supposed to wear these. I mean, if you were seen in the hallways wearing gloves or masks or gowns, you were called out. That was stuff you took off when you left the patient room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but suddenly
it's okay.
You're supposed to wear them all the time. It's okay.
And I can relate to what you're saying. Because I had a friend back about 2010 who was in the burn unit in the ICU. She had a very aggressive form. She had turbo cancer before turbo cancer was turbo cancer, is an interesting story too, because she was at UC Davis and it was probably the best research hospital in California. And she had the top OBGYN cancer doctor. Right. And she looked at me and she says, in the 25 years that I have been doing this job, this is only the second time I've ever seen a cancer this aggressive. And it was a true turbo cancer. I won't get into the details of it. Yeah. Right. Twice in 25 years, and this is the top OBGYN cancer doctor and probably one of the top hospitals in California. Now, turbo cancers are almost like a catchphrase. Just a little side note, but that's not why I said that. When she was in the ICU, when we'd go into her hospital room, we had to have full gown. We had gloves, gown, hat, mask, I mean, the whole nine yards. Right. And there was a cart out front with them. And when you came out of it, you had to take it all off and you had to throw it in the sanitary garbage can. I don't know the proper term, but that's it. Every time. You weren't walking around with it. You weren't reusing it. You went in, you gowned up. When you came out, just like what you said, it's a one-time use. And now all of a sudden, it's like, hey, fuck it, you got a beard. You want to use it again? That's all cool. Mm-hmm. It shows you at
to
least.
Me, it's like to me, it's like reusing a condom.
Gross. Great analogy. Exactly.
I mean, it is gross, but it's the truth. I mean, condoms work, but they're one-time use items.
it just reminded me of the Prince song. Raspberry Beret. She had a
Raspberry Beret.
She had a pocket full of Trojans, and some of them used. No, it was not. Little red Corvette, but another thing. Okay, hey, we've got about a half an hour left, and there's some topics I really want to get into from the perspective as a medical professional. You mentioned earlier, this is anecdotal, okay? But you're starting to see a lot of things in mothers that you hadn't seen before. And could you just kind of go on that for just a few minutes and elaborate what you mean by that?
Sure. Now, I'm gonna start this off by saying maternal health in general in this country, even prior to the COVID hysteria, was abysmal. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I hate to say it, but my particular profession is as in need as it is, because the health of mothers in this country is atrocious. And that's independent of the jibby jab, that's independent of the COVID hysteria. So it's tough in many ways to tease out how much of what I'm seeing is just related to piss poor maternal health versus how much of it is related to the medical intervention that was forced on the world and starting in early 2021. What I am seeing is an uptick in something called, you hear it depending on the part of the country, and I just learned this, apparently in different parts of the country it's referred to as something different, but there is something called gestational hypertension. That even a woman who, even a healthy mother who has no pre-existing hypertensive condition, just pregnancy itself is ridiculously stressful on the female body. And you can develop a syndrome of hypertension that is related simply to the fact that you're pregnant. And that's something that, you know, we see it all the time. It's a well-known phenomenon. At least at this point in time, though, what I'm seeing is a dramatic uptick in pregnancy-induced hypertension and a severe pregnancy-induced hypertension, because there's various grades of it. You know, there's kind of the low grade where obstetricians are just watching. You know, they may put mothers on certain antihypertensive medications. A lot of it's diet controlled. But then, you know, there gets to be a range that, you know, it's considered severe. When you kind of cross the threshold into the more severe forms of it, you have something called preeclampsia and eclampsia. Eclampsia is where the mother is extremely debilitated, will oftentimes have seizures. Her liver functions, the function of her liver gets whacked out. From a hematologic, there's bleeding tendencies. And ultimately, when you look at it from the baby side, what ends up happening is, you know, as much as you don't want to think about it, the female body looks at the baby as a parasite. And it's the female body will keep the fetus alive and give the fetus everything it needs until such time as the mother's body becomes compromised. And then, like anything else, the body starts to basically triage things. And it looks at the fetus as external and extraneous and not essential to the survival of the mother. So what happens is the blood flow to the placenta starts to be restricted. And if you restrict the blood flow to the placenta, you restrict the nutrient source and the metabolic, you restrict everything to the fetus. Mm-hmm. So the baby itself stops growing, runs into all sorts of problems. So it's usually at that point in time where it becomes safer to deliver the baby and deal with the prematurity than it is to keep the baby inside the mother.
Okay, that makes sense.
So fast forward, what I'm seeing is I'm seeing a lot more of an uptick in these severe preeclampsias necessitating premature delivery of the babies. I've also seen a couple of cases, and it's admittedly a couple. I'd have to say probably about 4 to 5, maybe 6 in the last, I'd have to say so since 2021, maybe 6, where you have conditions in the fetus that only usually occur when the mothers end up picking up certain infections. There's a group of infections we talk about called TORCH, which is an acronym for toxoplasmosis. The O is other, H is herpes, C is cytomegalovirus. It's the other H. God, I forgot to. Anyway, things like parvovirus, cytomegalovirus, toxoplasmosis, the various different types of herpes infections that will cause this condition called immune high drops. And high drops is, the babies are born just horribly edematous, so swollen. Basically, they look like little Michelin men, metabolically deranged. And usually what we find in those particular cases is if it wasn't a maternal infection, it's usually either if you're familiar with blood typing, so you have a negative blood type and a positive blood type. Mm-hmm. If a mother has a negative blood type and is exposed to the blood of a fetus with a positive blood type, her body produces antibodies against the fetus. Mm-hmm. So we see it in that. Or if we can't find a cause on the maternal side, it's usually either a cardiac defect in the baby. Sometimes a kidney defect, sometimes a problem with their baby's livers. Mm-hmm. But what I'm seeing now is this uptick in these cases where there is absolutely nothing on the maternal side. So all the infectious diseases that we'd look at on the mom side are negative. All the physiologic problems, so heart defects, kidney defects, liver defects on the baby side are negative. But yet these kids are what we call hydroptic. So they're a mess. And I don't know what else to attribute it to. Now, as you and I were talking off before we started talking, in my practice currently, in most cases, I can see the vaccination status of the mother because they put that in the medical record. Mm-hmm. But that's only if the mother either got the injection through a health system that then uploaded it into this particular medical record, or when asked, the mother said, yes, I got the COVID vaccine. So it's hard to say exactly what is causing this. But absent all the typical causes, it certainly makes me wonder, because it was pushed so hard on pregnant women. It was never studied in pregnant women. And, you know, just knowing what the substance itself is capable of doing now, it certainly makes me wonder. Now, interestingly enough, too, I'm still seeing a horrible rise in the rate of preterm births.
What's that?
And again, that's really, and I'll be the first to say, I can't and I won't say with certainty that I can blame this on the COVID vaccine. Because unlike some people out there, yes, I'll be the first to admit, I was 100% against this thing. I don't think it's safe. It's certainly not effective. And I do think it needs to be pulled from the market. But at the same time, I can't blame everything from the crucifixion of Christ to the Kennedy assassination on the COVID vaccine. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that want to do that.
Yes.
And it's really not helping our cause. So people, if you can't back up what you're saying, don't say it.
It just goes down.
But there's enough.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Ahead.
No,
I'll say this when you're done. I'm really.
I was just going to say, I'm seeing enough to make me question and make me say, okay, what exactly changed? And when I look back over the last 4 years, there's only one thing that was really introduced into the public that was forced on many people, especially pregnant women, that at the very least, we need to investigate exactly what are the pregnancy outcomes on vaccinated women. I'd love to see someone independent of either the CDC or some big research hospital or, God forbid, Pfizer or Moderna, fund a study to just look at, okay, these women were pregnant. They took the vaccine during their pregnancy. What was their pregnancy outcome? Because I also know, and again, anecdotally, I have a good probably 5 or 6 people that I know that miscarried shortly after taking the COVID vaccine.
Yeah.
I know of a handful of turbo cancers myself. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of former colleagues that particularly don't want to talk to me anymore because I've been outspoken on this since the beginning. But a couple of colleagues that have run into some very strange medical complications that, you know, I had a friend who ended up with a splenic artery aneurysm. Otherwise healthy woman, all vaxxed up.
Well,
I don't know what else changed.
Aneurysms. I'm not the best with medical terms.
Sure. No problem.
Barely prevalently associated with the adverse reactions.
Yes.
Let me see if I can get in my mind and remember it. It was the excess deaths and what caused them. And you would see the graph for COVID-19 when it hit, there was an increase in excess of deaths and then it tapered down.
It dropped off, correct.
And then, but he looked at different causes and he looked at bloodborne things, heart attacks, myocarditis, thrombosis. Those started rising. And he looked at another type. No, I think it was just that and different types of things. And that has steadily been rising and rising and rising.
Yep.
I just saw that the FDA officially announced that the life expectancy of an average citizen has gone down 3 years from, like 82 to 79 or something like that within the last
77 was the last one I heard, but in supposedly the most advanced country in the world with the supposed best healthcare system in the world.
Yeah.
Why are you can make the argument that we are only going to get to a certain life expectancy and that's all we can do, which I believe. I mean, I think we as humans have a set life expectancy. It's probably somewhere between 80 and 120 years. I don't know that we can go beyond that, at least with what we know now. There's no reason in the world. There's no reason in the world that the quote unquote most advanced healthcare system in the world should be seeing declining life expectancy.
Yeah.
And at a really dramatic rate. The other thing that has ticked up, and I don't know if it's gotten as much of attention, is infant mortality.
Yeah.
Infant mortality's been going up. And you know, it's tough. It's tough because you know, being in the position I'm in, I have the advantage of, I know the landscape pre-2020 and I know the landscape post-2020. And I will say, and again, I am the first person to say, if you put this shit in your body, you're nuts. So please don't, anybody who's listening to this, take anything I'm going to say as a defense of anything that's happened since March of 2020. But the one of the issues is that even pre-2020, at least in the area that I practice in, infant mortality was high, maternal health was low. So I've definitely seen an uptick in problems, but I will also say that a lot of the problems that at least in my area of practice, they did pre-exist the COVID hysteria. But that's not to say that this medical intervention that was forced on the world has not caused even more problems. Mm-hmm. You were alluding to the vasculars, and it definitely seems like the biggest issues with this this technology, this vaccine platform, and I don't think it's the COVID component as much as I do worry about just the platform itself, using this modified messenger RNA packaged inside a lipid nanoparticle. Lipid nanoparticles are well known. They were developed because they can cross the blood-brain barrier. Mm-hmm. They were developed in order to deliver certain medications across the blood-brain barrier. So if you're using it, you're using this product, and regardless of the payload that it's delivering, the troop carrier, as I'll call it, was designed to cross into the blood-brain barrier.
And it was designed by DARPA too. Initial finding was by DARPA.
That's so true.
Yeah, I always have that's to keep true. That in mind. You brought up a good
that is very true.
A good point. And before I forget it, my notes are not that bad. I gotta say it. Recently, didn't the Surgeon General of Florida come out and pretty much spill the beans about the recumbent DNA contamination in the shots and how they're getting in the nanolipid particles, which are therefore penetrating your cells and getting and dumping the payload into the nuclei of the cell? And this is E. coli recumbent DNA. And wants it pulled. So at least Florida is stepping forward and getting this out at a national level. What effect it'll have, I don't know. But is that true?
Dr. Latipo, Joseph Latipo, is probably one of the most honest, if not the most honest, public health official in this country. Mm-hmm. He actually was in your state. He was, I think he was in the UC system.
Okay.
He started speaking out. And of course, he got blackballed. And then I want to say it was sometime in 2021. And again, I'm not saying this to be political, but I know people who know Ron DeSantis who have, you know, who weren't directly involved with his administration, but know enough to know that, unlike many people, when all this was going on, the guy himself was reading the science. He wasn't just listening to Dr. Joe Blow and this person that says, here, you need to do this. He was reading the science. He was looking at it. He was also speaking to the dissenting scientists, Latipo being one of them. And Latipo was then offered the position as the Surgeon General of Florida. And quite frankly, I think the guy's amazing. What he's calling out, you know, he's spoken out against. So when I want to say it was in the summer of 2022. So I think they rolled out another one of their magic boosters in the fall of 2022, and then they again rolled it out in the fall of 2023. Latipo basically came out, and he was a little milquetoast for me, but given his position, I said, well, it's better than anyone else is doing. He basically said that if you were a healthy individual, and you were, and certainly children, you should not be taking these boosters. So he was kind of leaving it open to, you know, we're in Florida. We have a big silver hair population. So he was kind of leaving it open to, he's basically leaving it open for people to make their own decision.
Yeah.
What he came out with recently, so there was a hearing in the state government of South Carolina sometime in 2022, where a group of scientists were calling out what they were concerned with was that there's a certain amount of acceptable DNA contamination that you can have in certain products.
Right.
Every batch of these vaccines that were tested, the DNA contamination was far exceeding what was allowable per the FDA. So these people that testified before the South Carolina government raised this issue. Latipo himself had written a long letter to the FDA basically asking for some clarification and some explanation as to how can all this contamination be present in these products, yet the FDA guidelines for the amount of contamination are far less than what the FDA is saying is okay. Mm-hmm. And basically, the letter he got back was a pat on the head and said, oh, don't you worry, we're okay with all this.
We got the cover.
So he basically said, mm-hmm. Well, if you can't explain and you can't tell the public and tell me how this is safe, we can't recommend using this product.
Mm-hmm.
So the statement that Latipo issued was directly concerning this DNA contamination. Now, he has spoken out against the safety of the vaccine. He has spoken out against the efficacy of the vaccine. But as far as I know, the state of Florida, the official position right now in the state of Florida is that these things aren't safe. They're certainly not effective. They're available. They haven't been pulled off the market. But no one in the state health department is advising anyone to get these shots, even the elderly people. Because at this point in time, mm-hmm. and it's very interesting because, you know, most of my family still lives up north. The only those of us that escaped were myself, my wife, and my youngest daughter. My older children ended up staying up north, along with my mother and my in-laws.
Okay.
My daughter, who lives up north, who was not vaccinated, she just finished, I think, her third or fourth round of having COVID. My sister-in-law, who also is unvaccinated, has COVID again. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I look around, you know, here, and I'm going, okay, well, I'm gonna try to make some allowances for the fact that I'm in a warmer climate. Up north is cold. Definitely, you know, viral season's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I think we actually do have here in the state of Florida is actual herd immunity. Because, you know, I look around and the colleagues that I know that are getting COVID have all been vaxxed up. The ones that aren't vaxxed up that have gotten COVID, they've had a cold for 3 or 4 days. They've gotten over it and life's gone on. Me personally, now I will be the first, I will admit that in the summer of 2021, out of fear of losing my job and not being able to support my disabled wife and my children, I did take the Johnson & Johnson shot. I didn't take it willingly. Mm-hmm. I will never forgive myself for doing it, but I was naive and I thought, okay, maybe this will truly be a one and done thing. It'll go away and life will go on.
Right.
Thank God I had no, you know, other than some minor side effects initially, I did not have any problems with it. I have not, nor will I ever get another vaccine again in my life after that. Mm-hmm. But my point being is that here, where I don't think the general population is as vaxxed up as the rest of the country, COVID's not a problem here. It's a cold. People get it. Mm-hmm. They get it. They might be knocked out for a couple of days. They get over it and life goes on. Versus other parts of the country that were more you know, stringent in their masks and their vaccine requirements and their lockdowns, you know, even my kids up there that aren't vaccinated keep getting COVID.
It's funny,
but here it's not big of an issue.
It's funny, I've had COVID 3 times. Each time, mm-hmm. it was so mild that the only reason I knew I had it is I compared symptoms with people I had just been who had full blown cases. And when I mean mild, I mean mild.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you my story in a second.
I know so many people who are vaxxed and maxed. In fact, I just got delivering food to a friend. I don't know her full status. I do know that she's vaccinated and she's one of my best friends. Mm-hmm. You know, she's had it twice. The first time, mm-hmm. we both had it together, actually. Okay. I think we got it from a free concert out there at the park when they dropped them. But with that being said, for me, it was just 2 days of being very lethargic, just like, man, it's hard to get up and even go to the bathroom, right? And I thought, okay, that's just life. I'm getting older. Sometimes you have good days, sometimes you have bad days. Sure. So I'm sitting there, and it's a warm summer day in California. Got the house open. And I get this chill. Never had it before. And it went from to the core of my body. I mean, massive. Where I'm shutting my house up. I'm cranking the heater. I'm putting on sweats, bathrobes, everything. And it lasted 15 minutes. And it just disappeared. And I'm like, you know, my thing was like, that's fucking weird, but hey, it's gone. I'm good. Crack another beer. You know what the hell? So a few days later, I was with my friend who had a really bad case of it, full blown. And she was talking about, you know, what she went through. And then she mentioned these chills. And I went, whoa, slow down for a second. I want to hear about this. And she said for hers, it was severe. It lasted about a good hour and a half. And then I was like, okay, COVID number two that I got. But the only reason I knew I got it's because she had it. So I compared symptoms.
Yeah.
The third time, I was a little tired for a couple of days, and that's it. You know, I was like, I'm unvaccinated. Personally, I trust my immune system.
Yeah. And I feel the same way.
Than Pfizer's. And that's another thing that I've heard about. And I've also known a lot of people. It seems the more vaccinated they are, the more susceptible to getting it. And the
it's more severe the case it is
when they get it. And
so a couple of things. So one, I personally, I've had it one time. The only reason I knew I had it, it was the result of a test. And I'll explain why I actually tested myself in a second.
Sure.
So it would have been New Year's 2022 into 2023.
Okay.
I was working at our big facility, which is our most critical facility, so where the sickest patients are. I was covering the night shifts on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. It was extremely busy, didn't get any rest. So I worked on the 12/31, I worked on 1/1. When I woke up on the afternoon of 1/2, I had a headache, I had a little bit of a sniffle, and I was tired. My thought was, well, dude, you're almost 50 years old, you just got your ass kicked. That was the problem. The next day, the next day, I had no symptoms at all. That would have been a Wednesday. I think it was a Wednesday. Anyway, the day after that, my wife and my daughter both developed really bad sore throats.
Okay.
I had gone to work because I had no ill symptoms at all, nothing at all. My wife and my wife decided we had this home COVID test. I thought they had strep throat. So she takes a COVID test, says COVID positive. So I come home from work and I take the test, and sure enough, I'm positive too. At that point in time, I was gone. I was done with symptoms, and I never had another symptom. So the only reason, like I said, the only reason I knew I even had COVID was because my wife and daughter got sick and took a test, and I took a test as well.
Same here.
My daughter had really, really nasty, nasty sore throats. My daughter's lasted about 3 days, and then she was perfectly fine. My wife, who has quite a bit of underlying medical conditions, was sick for about 2 weeks. Ultimately, I just got her on some steroids and some ivermectin and azithromycin, and she was fine. But that is the only time the three of us have gotten a known COVID infection. I have a feeling I may have had it in 2021. Right around the time the Omicron strain hit the scene, it was around Christmas time, and I'm one of these people. I'm never sick. I can roll in raw sewage, and I probably won't get sick. It's just, thank God, I got a good immune system, and I just don't get sick. So it was around Christmas of 2021. Out of the blue, just developed these sniffles and a sneeze for no good reason. Lasted about 48 hours. Never had a cough, never had a fever. I do think I probably had Omicron. But again, I'm not one to run out to a doctor or take a test for something. You know, I don't, if I have a cold, I have a cold. I don't need a test to tell me I have a cold.
Dude, that's,
I'll take care of myself. I'll do my chicken soup and hot tea, and in a couple of days, I'll be fine.
It's funny. I had the exact same thing at the exact same time as December of 2021. I was staying at my friend's house out in the country. And I woke up Sunday morning, walked in the house and I just had this massive runny nose, like abnormally runny, like mm-hmm. there's no faucet, right? And it's grass season. It's getting wet, so all the grass yeah. I'm thinking, okay, allergies, sure. no big deal. I walk in the house. His wife, I almost said her name. Ooh, let's just say the missus of the house
okay.
had this. What? And we both had it. And we're like, whoa, I mean, this is weird. But I'm like, okay, you know, it's spring. Didn't give it two shakes of a stick, literally. Got yeah. my stuff together, put it in, took off. By the next day, it was gone, right? Gone. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, la da da. I get a call a couple days after I left from the missus of the house. Mm-hmm. And how she has full-blown COVID. And I mean the typical case. Like, she felt like she was dying. Her two teenagers, mm-hmm. right, both had it. But they had basically the runny noses, and they lost their sense of taste and smell for a couple of days. Not mm-hmm. a big deal. Me, just like you, Captain. Sniffly, runny nose. Next day, mm-hmm. gone. I'm off on my merry way. People who... let's just say that I'm going to make an assumption here, and it's purely an mm-hmm. assumption because I don't ask people their medical history unless they offer it. We're probably highly vaxxed, probably vaxxed to the mm-hmm. max. And I just found it odd. It was kind of like one of those moment of clarity times, you know, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, huh. So the stuff I've been hearing from the Dr. McCulloughs, the Malones, the doctors. Well, I didn't know mm-hmm. about Dr. Jessica Rose at that time, who was one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. God, I want to get her on my show.
She's good.
We'll get
yeah.
her. Jessica
Rose. I actually want to good. Get you too. I've personally, I did a podcast with her specifically. I want to say it might have been in the fall. She's great. Yeah. Malone's good, although I don't know. There's a guy that a podcaster that I think is amazing. He is a Pakistani. He's Scottish. He's Pakistani by his ethnicity, but he was born in Scotland. He's an orthopedic surgeon in the UK, and he started speaking out against it and was completely blackballed, lost a job, unable to practice. His name is Ahmed Malik. I think he goes by Malik, actually. But he had Malone on. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Okay. Great guy. Great guy. He did a podcast with Malone, and Malone just attacked him. I really lost a lot of respect for Malone after this. You know, I'd heard all the speculation about Malone actually being pretty much on the other side of all this and more of a controlled opposition.
I've heard that, too.
And I never really took it that way. I mean, Malone strikes me, the guy's brilliant. I have no doubt that this guy knows his stuff. I 100% believe he was one of the pioneers of this technology.
Sure.
So my thought on him is that he's just kind of a disgruntled, crotchety old guy. But the way he treated Ahmed Malik after this was, it really turned me off. You know, he was asked just some straightforward questions in a very friendly way. He wasn't right. really challenged. I mean, basically Malik was just bringing up some of the controversies that surrounds Malone.
Right.
And it was a friendly exchange. But then after the podcast, Malone went on the attack on his own Substack. And I mean, he just really attacked Dr. Malik to the point where I'm going, dude, what, you can't stand up to some basic questions? You aren't being criticized. You weren't even being challenged. This guy just asked you questions on some of the controversies that have really been out in the public with you since you popped on the scene. So I lost a lot of respect for Malone. McCullough, on the other hand, I have a ton of respect for. He really seems like the real deal. He put everything on the line. There's another physician out of Texas, Mary Bowden, I think is her name. She goes by Doc Breathe. She was another one that was really attempted to be destroyed by the system. Mm-hmm. You have Jay Bhattacharya, who's excellent. So you know, there are thankfully people out there.
Well, I think that there when it first came out, they were kind of like part of the disinformation dozen crowd.
Sure.
And whenever, I'm just my nature, whenever the government says, don't look here, they're bad people.
That's where I want to look.
Yep. The information that I get from the mainstream media, and I'm going to compare the information I get mm-hmm. from the source, in this case, a disinformation Dethan. Excuse me if I speak like that, but that is my opinion on people who think like that. Right.
Yeah.
So I critically analyzed it. And mm-hmm. kind of what I saw, and granted, I'm a layman, is I looked at the mainstream sources, your CDC types, you know, they were engaging in pure propaganda. They never answered a question. They refused all debates. Anything that was brought to their way as a question, which is relevant in any way, it was deflected with logical fallacies, this and that, straw man arguments, ad hominems, and attacks and attacks and attacks and attacks. So I look over on the disinformation dozen. I'm just going to use that as a catch term of these doctors. And what they were doing is they were citing medical studies. They were citing facts, in my opinion. I'm a layman. Mm-hmm. And their argument to me, a layman, a non-medical person, made a lot more sense and was a lot more compelling than what I hear mm-hmm. from the sources that most people believe.
The establishment sources, their explanation is, we're going to tell you this and you have to trust us because you have to trust us.
Yeah.
Whereas the quote unquote disinformation group of people are coming out with facts and with evidence and saying, well, no, you can't trust this. And here's why.
Right.
You know, if you really want to hammer it home, there was just a story released in the New York Post. I know there's been the kerfluffle, we'll call it, over this goofball president of Harvard that just stepped down. Well, interestingly, another story just came out of Harvard Medical School where, and I believe it was oncology, so cancer research,
right.
These researchers were just flat out distorting and lying about their data and publishing it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm sorry to all you people who want to believe the establishment. Do it at your own risk. Let's just go back to the most pertinent example that we have right now. Let's use the Pfizer vaccine.
Okay.
When old doc, the veterinarian Albert Bourla, came out and told you that his Pfizer vaccine was 95% effective, do you know what that was based on?
I briefly do, but I think you'd give a better explanation. So what is it based on?
So basically, you know, and I'm not a statistician, and I don't claim to be a statistician, and I'm not an epidemiologist. But I will tell you that being a practicing medical provider, you have to have a basic knowledge and a basic understanding of research statistics, how they work, what the numbers mean.
Right.
So there's something called a relative risk ratio and an absolute risk ratio. So basically, we'll go with the Pfizer study. So basically, what Pfizer said is, okay, if we have 100 people in our quote unquote experimental group, so those are the people that got the experimental medical product, and 100 people in the placebo group. Now, what's very interesting is that unlike most vaccine research, the COVID-19 vaccine actually had a true placebo group where all they got was a saline injection.
Had.
In most cases of vaccine research, they don't. But we'll just—I can go into that in a minute. But for the COVID vaccine, one group did get the experimental product. One group got a saline injection.
Right.
They based their 95% efficacy on this. One person in the experimental group got COVID. So one out of 100. Two people in the control group got COVID. So 2 out of 100. That gives you a relative risk ratio of 95%. When in actuality, the absolute risk ratio is something along the lines of 20 to 30%, meaning their vaccine may have been 20 to 30% effective in stopping someone from having a symptomatic case of COVID. That's not talking about transmission. That's not talking about anybody else. There's where you got your fucking 95% efficacy. If you want to believe these bastards and take their products, have at it, take as many as you want. I step into the fray when you're forcing other people to do something against their will.
That's where I
draw my line.
That's where
the products are out there. Yeah. The products are out there. If you want them, hey, I go back to, I think it was Ron Paul when he was running for president. I don't know if it was in 2008 or I think he did 2008, 2012. I remember one of the debates where they were talking about drug legalization or drug decriminalization. Okay. And he said, if we legalized heroin tomorrow, would you run out and do it? I wouldn't.
No.
And I feel the same way. These products are out there. If you want to go take them, go for it. Knock yourself out. I stepped into the fray when you were forcing people against their best wishes, against their better judgment, to take a medical product that, one, they most of them didn't need, and two, we had no idea if it was safe.
Yeah.
And that is where my volume went up, was when they started forcing people to do it. That's my line in the sand.
I'm along the same lines. I believe in freedom. If you want to take it, take it. If you don't.
Exactly.
The caveat I would tell people is just be an informed consumer, right?
Exactly.
I'm not going to stop you from taking it. I'm not going to bust your balls if you do. It's your choice. But please respect my choice not to do it. And don't compel me through social pressure, through workforce pressure, through governmental pressure, to have to take a procedure that I know unequivocally I do not want in my body. I'm call me old-fashioned, but I still kind of believe in that old thing called the Nuremberg.
An immune system?
The immune system. But we've burned through well over an hour there, Mr. Captain. So I think let's put a banana and a bow on this cool conversation, because we could be end up, next thing you know, it's gonna be midnight.
Oh, we could do this for hours. Yeah.
And I'll be like, dude, I need to go to the bathroom real bad, bro. So I want to thank you for coming on here. In the future,
my pleasure.
One of my plans is I'm going to bring Dr. Jessica Rose on, and I'd like to have you both on. Mm-hmm. And
I'd love to
basically just wind you two up and let you go, and I'll just kind of moderate and guide from the rear and stuff like that.
Anytime you want me back, I'm happy to be here.
My friend, you will be back on. Trust me.
All right.
A while, because I'm only doing one show a week and I got a long line.
That's all right.
Acapulco in 2 weeks to an Acapulco.
Oh, so, you going to an Acapulco?
Hell yeah.
All right.
And I hope
I'd love to go one day. I've always wanted to meet Jeff Berwick. I've always liked him.
Yeah, I'm going with zero expectations. Next weekend, or my next guest is going to be Charlie Robinson, and we're going to talk Acapulco. I've never been down there. I'm going down there with zero expectations. But I have a feeling in my gut that when I come back, I'm going to be a changed person, one form or another. Might be ramblings of a crazy old man, or it might happen. But regardless, I'm going to have fun. And I'm hoping to come back with a nice fat Mexican Rolodex of some really interesting people to get on this show. Because the goal of the show is interesting people with interesting ideas to have an interesting conversation. And you, Captain, fit the bill tonight. I mean, I've been fascinated hearing you talking about things. And like the gastro hypertension, what was that term again, if you don't mind?
Oh, gestational hypertension.
Yeah. And I was thinking, could that be a reason why we're seeing that miscarriages increase? But another conversation for another show.
It could be. It definitely could be. With one of the biggest things, and I know we got to wrap this up, but one of the biggest negative effects that we're seeing from this intervention, it's all in the blood, it's all in the vasculature. Yeah. There's other issues as well, there's a lot of hematologic or blood related and vascular issues that have been side effects from this. So it very well links into issues of pregnancy. Because if the vascular system's a mess, the placenta is not going to work right, and the baby's not going to do well.
The baby
requires on a healthy vascular system on the mother's side.
And I'm assuming, because they're nanolipid particles, that they can get into the baby through the placenta. Just assuming.
It could be. I have seen a few things that have made me question. Could this have been some crossover? You know, I've seen some preterm babies that, you know, and not to draw this out, but another big issue in premature babies is the development of their eyes, something called retinopathy of prematurity. Mm-hmm. You all know Stevie Wonder. That's why he was blind. Yeah. Anyway, I have seen a handful of babies who were premature, but had otherwise very benign courses, meaning although they were premature and they needed to stay in the hospital for a few months, they right. weren't sick. There is something called a healthy preterm baby, but they had severe retinopathy of prematurity that didn't line up with their overall course of their overall medical course. And their mothers, some of them I saw, the mothers were vaccinated. Some of them, and I'll be honest, some of them I saw, the mothers had COVID. So it is hard to say. But we do know that the spike protein from the virus is what that mRNA shot is training the body to make. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it certainly could be.
Well, my whole wish, I wouldn't say whole wish, but a wish of mine is that with this evidence coming out, that the medical establishment would look into this, if anything, to eliminate it. I mean, first problem solving 101, mm-hmm. identify the problem so you can eliminate it. And at least mm-hmm. if they can eliminate it, then we as a people will know, okay, that's not what's causing that. Let's look right. at other areas and truly do a real investigation in what's causing this increase in mortality in these diseases. And if it's not the shot, then show us it's not the fucking shot. Don't just all these things coming up.
They can't. Like,
oh, it's fine. No, we won't want to debate you crazy conspiracy theorist. Oh, hell no. Oh, well, that genetic contamination. Yeah, the process one when we developed it and tested it, right? That was pure mRNA. Oh, yeah, we won't talk about the bait and switch we did to process two to mass manufacture it. Completely different process, and it's made by putting it in vats of E. coli. Okay. Mm-hmm. We won't talk about that because
nope.
that one might get us one step closer to the truth. And you know the truth. I know the truth. I think that this is part of, and you know, my people know that I'm crazy as a fucking loon, so I'll just say it. A, it's about power and money, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's about depopulation. The elites are blatant. You can go on the World Economic Forum and you could see talks mm-hmm. about it. You can read books. You can see TED Talks, and they're all talking about depopulating the earth
yeah.
and the population. These are serious people talk about serious plans. And it's kind of like back, we can relate to this when E.F. Hutton speaks, bitches.
Mm-hmm.
Better listen to him.
You so, listen to him, yeah. I've resisted the idea that this was an overall depopulation agenda.
Yeah, I went through a lot of check marks.
But the more I look into it, the more that is being uncovered, and the fact that the alarm bells are just raging red. I mean, this is like the alerts are flashing. Every damn light on the dashboard is flashing bright red.
Check engine
light. But
we're
turning away from it. I can't help but think there's more that, and so am I comfortable saying that this is 100% an agenda to kill off half the population of the world? No, I don't have that kind of evidence, but is it enough for me to go, maybe they're right. Maybe that's what's going on. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't take much. I mean, these people have said it for 50 years, if not longer.
Oh, man,
they talk about it constantly. There's clearly an agenda to destroy the civilization that we currently have.
And they want
us eating bugs. They want us locked up in small cities. So, you know, if it quacks like a duck and it's got yellow feet, it's probably a duck. And that's I'm kind of landing on that right now. And it's all circumstantial and it's anecdotal. And I admit that. You know, Klaus Schwab has not called me and said, "We're going to kill you all until you eat the bugs." I mean, no, I don't have that kind of proof. But, you know, there's enough.
I
there's agree. Enough.
I think there's a lot of smoke out there. And where there's smoke, there's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
I'm still trying to find the exact source. Was it the cigarette burning that fell on the floor? Was it the candle that was knocked over? Did someone leave the stove on? I don't know exactly. My guess is it's probably a combination of all of them.
Right.
I don't think there's one answer here. I think there are multiple competing interests that all grabbed onto this. Mm-hmm. The question, my final question that I'm trying to figure out, and I probably will never get the answer. I know this thing came out of a lab. There's no question about it.
Right.
What I want to know, was it an inadvertent escape, meaning someone working in the lab that didn't have the right precautions that got sick and took it outside into the public?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it done on purpose?
I have
my suspicions. I don't know which one it is, but I do know that this did not come from a bat fucking a pangolin in the wet market in Wuhan.
No, and AIDS didn't come from fucking a green monkey in Africa.
No, it did not.
That we'll leave it at that. Everybody out there, I would say, where can they find you? But you don't need to be found. You don't want to be found. So I will not.
You can give them my Twitter handle. I'm on Twitter. Okay. I'm on Twitter at 1 minute to midnight. It's at 1 minute, MinuteTomidnit.
Is it spelled a number one or the letter?
No, all the word. It is the number one. Yeah.
Geez, I don't even know my own Twitter handle. I'll keep it in the, I'll post it when I post the show. So once you send it.
Okay. Yeah. Feel free. My Twitter info is out there. More than happy. Anybody that wants to connect, please do. Love to meet new people. You know, if you're going to be a troll, I'm going to ignore you. So don't even try. I have no tolerance for it. You want to engage in conversation? I'm all for it.
Yeah, I say, hate listeners are welcome. Just spell my name right. That's Naughty by Nature, Nature Boy. And Naughty is spelled N-A-U-T-I as in nautical. Get it right. N-A-U-T-I as in nautical. Spell my name right, hate listeners. In fact, hate listeners, throw a fucking hate party. Get them all together. Get them around the screen. Make yourself some popcorn.
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Hate the fuck on old Nature Boy. I appreciate it. I do. It builds my numbers. So everybody, with that being said, please go out there and the listeners, subscribe to my Naughty by Nature with Nature Boy Twitter account. It's at Nature Boy NBN. That's at Nature Boy NBN is Naughty by Nature. Go to my Rumble page. Please follow my Rumble page. It's at, just put in Naughty by Nature with Nature Boy. It comes up. Also, every Friday night at 8 p.m., the New Prisoners podcast, their channel on Rumble does an encore presentation. So Six, I want to say thank you, my friend. Thank you for helping me over double my numbers and get this out there. Please, everybody, if you like this show, listen to the next one. I've got Charlie Robinson coming up after I get back from Acapulco. I've got the World Mayor's Experience he goes by on there, which is a fascinating guy. And I've got a whole host of amazing guests out there. So check it out. If you like it, share it with a friend. If you fucking hate it, share it with a friend. Party on, Wayne. Party on, Garth. And have yourself a fantastic day.